It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe that July is almost gone, depending on when you're listening to this, either July 25th at 9:05 or July 26th, Sunday at 7:05. July 4th seemed to be yesterday, but it was actually close to a month ago. I want to give a big shout-out to my prior guests. We had Russ Conti, a former colonel from the State Troopers, and he talked about the Helios Campus Safety Symposium that is coming up. It's running on August 10th, 11th, and 12th. And in the past, of course, it was in person. This year, it needs to be virtual, and basically, it's on safety and mental health at the campus level. If you're interested in signing up for that, there's still room. Just go on the nhcuc.org website. That's New Hampshire College and University Council website, and you can participate virtually August 10th, 11th, and 12th. And last weekend, we had a really interesting guest, Craig Peterson, who's pretty nationally recognized, has his own radio shows on various stations, and we were talking about cybersecurity in this day and age where so many people are working virtually. And basically, amongst other things, Craig reviewed the various online collaboration tools, including WebEx, which is what we use, but there are other obvious ones like Microsoft Teams and Zoom. And Craig was making the point that the most secure online collaborative tool, video conferencing, is WebEx. So I'm glad my IT team selected them. Of course, Zoom is very popular at a family level, and you know many organizations do use Zoom, but if you listen to the show, and if you want a rebroadcast of it, just go on anydelta.com. You'll hear that there are, in fact, security issues relative to Zoom, and also somehow there's a China link as well. So in any event, not to scare anybody, but if you want to listen to that show, just go on anydelta.com website, and again, WebEx Teams seems to be the most secure. But this weekend, July 25th and 26th, joining me is Dr. Richard Berryman, who's appeared several times on my show before. Richard is one of our great dental consultants at Northeast Delta Dental. And we miss these gentlemen and ladies because we've basically pretty much since March 16th, three-quarters of the company has been working virtually. And again, a big shout-out to our IT team. As soon as the ADA on March 16th announced that the dentist should recommend it to be seen only for emergencies, we pretty much flowed out all of our employees, making sure that they were set up to work from home. And about 45 of us have been working on campus since March 16th, so you know, socially distanced. But one of the groups working virtually has been our dental consultants, one of whom is Dr. Berryman. So, Richard, nice to hear from you, and I can't wait for there to be a vaccine so I can see you in person, or maybe we'll see each other socially distanced at some point. But thank you for joining me this weekend.
Yeah, it's good to be back, Tom.
We miss you, of course, and it's interesting, as an aside, this isn't the topic of today's show, but like I mentioned, we have three-quarters of our employees working from home, and we have over 200 employees, and many, many of the younger employees are the ones that are contacting me saying, wait, when can you get back on campus? And as Richard will attest to, I've done close to 90 straight emails every day to all of the employees because I want to make sure we stay connected, and approximately 60 to employees that were furloughed, and most of those have come back. Because one interesting fact, maybe for the listening audience, again, our life, Richard's and my life, changed on March 16th. But that, you know, in 2.5 months, we're almost at 100% of where we were in terms of claim volume. So I was very confident in our dental community that they would handle the new norm and the new practices that you had to follow in terms of the waiting room and other things related to personal protection equipment. I was very confident in our dentists, and we did provide, you know, certain financial relief as well as free PPE. I was less sure that patients, the employees, our subscribers of our group insurance contracts, that they would flock, you know, back to the dental offices. But it's been pretty amazing. So it's a great testimony to the the great dentists that we have in New Hampshire, Maine, and Vermont, that even though when you show up, they kind of look like they're astronauts now, but nevertheless, it's a warm environment, and people feel like you know that they're safe. So it's been great, Richard. So I know that even working from home virtually, you've seen this kind of rise almost to the pre-COVID benchmark. So don't you think that's a real testimony to the confidence that the average citizen has in their dentist?
I do. I do. And there was, you know, I'm sure there was some elective work that was delayed, but they're back to work, and the procedures in dental offices now are quite a bit different with regard to the infection control, and there's even some new equipment out there, these high-speed filter suction machines that dental offices didn't have before. So it's an interesting time to practice, that's for sure. Unfortunately, fortunately or unfortunately, I don't anymore. So, I've been in dentistry for what 48 years now. Since graduation, 52 if you consider 4 years of dental school. But you know, I love the dental profession, but I also love history, and so I like to combine that. For former patients of mine or anybody that was in my office for 30 plus years knew that I had quite a collection of vintage dental items there, which I recently donated a whole bunch of them to the National Museum of Dentistry in Baltimore. So if you ever get to Baltimore, go to the National Museum of Dentistry and you might see some of my my items in there.
That's terrific. Well, when travel is more common again, maybe I'll make that trip. But that's a nice segue to our topic, because we do want to talk about the history of dentistry. And I'm not nearly as qualified to talk about this as Richard, of course, but I have gotten very interested in, because twice we've had Mary Otto in, one for our strategic planning and once for our customer service week. And Mary is the author of the book called Teeth, which is the story of oral health in America. And basically, she was a newspaper reporter in the Washington, D.C. area, and she basically was covering the story of the young gentleman that died of a tooth infection. And basically, it was going to be a one-off story, but as she got into it, she got really curious in terms of the history of dental and why, you know, dental schools were separated from med schools, and why there's still, unfortunately, although we have it much better in New Hampshire, but there's still this inequality of people that go regularly to the dentist and have access to, you know, fluoridated water, et cetera, versus underserved populations that don't. So take us back. I mean, I know we all know this, that probably the early evidence of dentistry was probably B.C., but how about if you take us into the modern age in the 1700s and where it all began in France, perhaps?
Yeah, I first met Mary Otto at the American Association of Dental Consultants meeting a couple of years ago. I got her to speak there, and it was very interesting because Diamante Driver was the young boy who did die of a brain abscess from an infected tooth, and that happened right near Baltimore, and that's where I went to dental school. So it's I knew a lot of the people she mentioned in the book. Some of them were even professors of mine. But if we go back, the earliest evidence of any dental treatment actually goes back to 5000 BC, where a Sumerian text described tooth decay being caused by worms. And believe it or not, that really wasn't proven false until the 1700s. So for 5,000, 6,000 years, people believed that tooth decay was caused by worms. And then in 1723, Pierre Fouchard, who was a French surgeon, but he was also called the father of modern dentistry, identified that it's really acids from sugar that cause tooth decay. So that changed the profession all around. 1840 was the first dental college in the world, Baltimore College of Dental Surgery. That's where I went, but I didn't graduate in 1940. I graduated in 1972.
Geez, Richard, I'm glad to hear that. Geez.
Well,
but you went to the you went, but I did know you went to the the school that was that touts itself, and I guess it is true that the first college dental school in the world. So that's terrific. So is that really where you got your interest in history? I know you had it in your office
Stuff. I grew up as an Air Force brat and lived in France and England, but I've always been interested in history. And fortunately, I had a father who, when we did travel, was also interested in history, and so we would stop at just about every historical place we could find. But so 1840 was the first dental college, but then, you know, it didn't take long. 1841, the state of Alabama enacted the first Dental Practice Act, actually licensed dentists for the first time, because up until that time, and even really extending for another 40, 50 years, most of the dentists were preceptors. They would attach themselves to an older dentist, and that's how they learned. People, even back then, you even had blacksmiths or barbers, taking teeth out. So dentistry was certainly not a profession back then. It was a trade. And so there were two dentists, Dr. Chapin and Dr. Harris, who said, you know, we need to have a better consistent education. And that's when they formed the Baltimore College of Dental Surgery. The American Dental Association came along in 1859. The first meeting was in Niagara Falls, New York. And then in our own backyard in 1863, the New England Dental Society was formed. It's the longest continuously active dental education society in the country.
So let's pause there because we've got to go to break. But just as a reminder, those New England Dental Society meetings still go on. I know Delta Dental sponsors them, and I know you've attended. So for our listening audience, we've gotten to 1863. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio, and this weekend, July 25th and 26th, joining me is Dr. Richard Berryman, great friend, great colleague here at Northeast Delta Dental and a longtime practitioner in the Concord area. And we haven't even mentioned it, but Richard is also a great leader in Rotary and has been on prior shows with me talking about some of his Rotarian experiences. And he's given a lot back to the community. So we're lucky to still have him in the Concord area. So you brought us forward to about 1863 with New England Dental Society, and it's the longest running education group in the United States, including, you know, they have an annual event I know that we sponsor. So let's move forward. We're not yet we're about at the Civil War, so good timing. So let's get into the first rubber dam, I guess.
Well, yeah, 1864 was the first use of a rubber dam designed by a dentist in New York City. 1866 was interesting. Lucy Beeman Hobbs was the first woman dental graduate in the United States from the Ohio College of Dentistry. And then in 1867, the Harvard Dental School became the third dental school, but it was the first dental college attached to a university. And because they're Harvard, they, instead of a DDS, Doctor of Dental Surgery degree that was bestowed on graduates at Baltimore College of Dental Surgery and then Temple, which was a Philadelphia dental school.
So let's pause there for 1 second. So you mentioned a couple things that I think are interesting. One, in 1866, we had the first woman graduate. And when I've had some of our colleagues on, for example, Dr. Bob Urban, and he's a graduate of Tufts, and you know, this is not in the 1800s, by the way. This is obviously later in the late 1900s. But in his first dental class, it was all male. And now, of course, as you know, more than half the class are women, and so we've, come a long way. And I guess the first African American dental graduate was Harvard in 1869. But could you pause a little bit on the DMD versus DDS? Because I actually get that question a lot, and I try to simplify by basically saying there is no difference between a DMD and DDS, but that's kind of shorthand. So maybe
right.
You can just spend a few minutes on that.
Well, from a historical perspective, as I said, Harvard wanted to be a little bit different, and they wanted the MD in there more for prestige than anything else. And so they made their degree a Doctor of Medical Dentistry instead of Doctor of Dental Surgery. Up until then, all the schools were Doctor of Dental Surgery. But then a lot of the schools started picking up, and most of the New England schools, Harvard, BU, Tufts, University of Connecticut, they all give DMD degrees. And I know when I first came to New Hampshire and put my shingle out and people saw DDS, they thought I was an oral surgeon. I did a lot of oral surgery, but I was... So there, you're right. There is no difference in education between the degrees. Some of those schools that give DMDs will say that, well, we have more science courses than the Doctor of Dental Surgery degree, but that's not true either. So,
oh, good. So I've been my shorthand has been correct. And so then in 1869, Robert Cannon Freeman was the first African American dental graduate, and then we segue a little bit into some technology. So we have electric dental engines, and then also talk about toothpaste. So we're not even audience. We're not even close to the year 1900 yet. So proceed, Richard.
Okay. So yeah, in 1873, Colgate was the first mass-produced toothpaste. I'll probably skip a few of these, but New Hampshire Dental Society was formed in 1877. In 1883, the National Association of Dental Examiners. And that's when you talk about people like Bob Urban. He was a dental examiner for Northeast Dental Boards for 30 years or more.
And we've had a number of Delta Dental Board members, Dr. Hedstrom, to name one, Dr. Bosch, and of course Bob Urban, doing these exams. So it's pretty terrific that people take their personal time. I know flying has changed now, so I'm not sure how it's being done, but I know all the time dentists on our board who've been dental examiners, they were always in airports, overseeing the testing. So anyway, that was way back in 1883. All right, yeah. Push forward with we
okay.
have
the 1885. The dentist in New Orleans was the first one to use the chairside dental assistant, and then in 1887, the first commercial dental laboratory, Stone and Eddy, was formed in Boston. 1890 was interesting. Ida Gray, she was the first Afro-American woman graduate, University of Michigan. And to get more local, 1896 was the first use of dental X-rays in dentistry in the United States. And John McCary in Manchester, New Hampshire, got the first X-ray machine in a dental office in 1914. And Floyd Williams, who was a friend of mine and lived till he was 107 years old, he was the second one to get a dental X-ray machine.
Wow, that's interesting. You knew Floyd, but you didn't go to school with him, I assume.
No, I didn't go to
school. That's good. But there was also, I remember going to Canterbury Shaker Village, and they said that one of their... and we sponsored it, but there was a dental chair in one of their buildings, which was one of the first, dental chairs in New Hampshire. So tell us about Novocaine.
Yeah, well, local anesthetic, 1905, Novocaine was the first local anesthetic. It was a derivative of cocaine and made by a German chemist. So after 1905, you could go in and, get numbed up. But also, remember talking to Floyd Williams. He was fascinating because he graduated in 1914. Dentists back then used to charge you for the Novocaine. It was like an extra dollar. It was like $1 or $2 to get a tooth out or a filling, but then it was an extra dollar for the Novocaine. So a lot of people say, no, don't worry about it, doc, just get it done. 1913 was the first school for dental hygienists, Dr. Alfred Fones in Bridgeport, Connecticut. The first graduate from New Hampshire, a dental hygiene graduate from Forsyth Dental School in Boston, was Miss Mary Nina Locke of Northampton. We have a lot of firsts.
Yeah, and isn't it true that John Houlihan is still the only New Hampshire dentist that has been the president of the American Dental Association?
Yeah, that goes back in, 1975?
Right.
Probably in that area.
Great guy. I met him before. He has long since passed away, but a very interesting guy.
Yeah, one interesting thing. 1938, let's talk about nylon bristle toothbrushes developed by the DuPont Company. And why did they develop them? Well, up until 1938, all your toothbrushes, the bristles were pig bristles. And they came from China. But in 1938, the Japanese were invading China, and we couldn't get any more pig bristles.
So still dependent on China. So the more things change, the more they remain the same?
Yeah, sort of, And so DuPont came out with the nylon bristles, which we've used ever since. And you and I have talked in the past about, whether we should be using hard, medium, or soft toothbrush bristles, but soft are still the best. So 1945 was the first water fluoridation for a community water supply in Newburgh, New York, and Grand Rapids, Michigan. 1950, the first fluoridated toothpaste.
So let's pause on fluoride so we all reasonable people understand the importance of fluoridation and has been very important in the improvement of the oral health of citizens in the United States. But, of course, there's still the fluoride debates that still occasionally happen at the community level. Why do you think that is, Richard?
Well, first of all, there are the people out there that, for example, today, they don't want to wear masks because it's my individual freedom to do what I want. I'm an American. So, and I don't want to put stuff, put in my water supply that I don't agree with. So, but water fluoridation of community water supplies, anyway, has proven ever since the 1940s and 50s that it reduces tooth decay by approximately 60%. And then, of course, if you put the fluoride in toothpaste, it's even more effective.
And that was in 1950. And then, so moving along to technology, in the 50s we had some dental hand picks and the dental chair. So tell us about that.
Yeah, 1957 was the first high-speed dental drill. Up until then, if older people will remember this belt-driven thing that went around. But another interesting thing is Floyd Williams, again, the dentist from Manchester, graduated from Tufts in 1914, and he practiced until 1959, and he retired because he did not want to learn how to use the high-speed handpiece. It came out in 57, and by 59, if you didn't have one, people just didn't go to your practice anymore because it was such an incredible advancement. 1958, the next year, was the first fully reclining dental chair. 1980 were the first, well, not the first, because you have to go back to, when were the first dental implants? 1937.
But it's been a while, and a lot of people think that implants are new, but in sort of the commercial world, I mean, really, like you said, it's really been since 1980.
Yeah, well, the ones back in 1937 until 1980 were made out of Vitalium, which was the same metal that we made partial dentures out of. And then when they came out with the titanium, which are much more biocompatible, those really started working. And then if we have some time, we can talk a little bit.
Yeah, let's talk. We have a couple minutes. So basically, that was a great history. Dentistry has come a long way. There are a lot of things that are the same, but it's definitely progressed just in terms of people going to the dentist, dental coverage. Basically, once there was insurance or prepaid dental benefits, then that flowed people to the dental office. Because even today, it's true that if you have, let's say, Northeast Delta Dental group coverage, 70 to 90% of that population goes to the dentist. If you don't have dental coverage, only about 30% of that population goes. So the first, and I've explained this before to the listening audience, but the first dental plans really, it went kind of left coast to right coast, so Delta of California and Delta of Washington in the mid-50s. And then we started here at Northeast Delta Dental, and roughly the first plan was probably sold around in the early 70s, and we now have close to 1 million dental covered lives, and across the United States, if you include all Delta plans, we're separate companies, but in our federation, we have about 78 million people out of the 330 million people in the country that have dental coverage. And why is that important? I'm not doing a commercial, but the reality and statistically, if you have prepaid dental coverage, prepaid dental insurance, you tend to go to the dentist way more often. So the role of the Delta Dental system, and specifically Northeast Delta Dental here in New Hampshire, is to get people to go to the dentist because we want people to go to the dentist. And with our Health Rural Wellness Program, we're actually encouraging people to go to the dentist even more. And depending on your previsor score, and we've explained that in past shows, you may be entitled to a third or fourth cleaning and some other services in a calendar year, which Delta Dental pays for. We don't have time, but for the listening audience, the two cleanings per year, was not based on science. It was based on the toothpaste companies saying, use our toothpaste and go to the dentist twice a year. That then became the, the plan design of choice, although many of us need more than two cleanings and some could probably have less. So, Richard, you're a wealth of information. We always run out of time. I've got to get you back. I can't wait to see you in person. We'll have to do a Zoom or a WebEx soon. So thank you for all you do for the community and also for Northeast Delta Dental.
Yeah, thanks for having me here, Dave.